Tanatava, everyone. You know, I don't know if you've noticed, but there's a lot of mention of God in the Moxor. I think God must have a really good PR agent. I mean, Abraham and Sarah make a place, but there's a lot of God in here. And over this past year, a group of us had an opportunity in a class called God for Grown-Ups to sort of speak about God. And it seemed to me to be appropriate for us to get to hear some of their experiences, because Rabbi David Wolpe always has a great way of giving us new names for things. And rather than talking about traditional Jews and progressive Jews, he talks about non-literalist Jews. And a non-literalist Jew is not convinced that the Torah and the particulars of Judaism, such as not mixing wool and linen together, were commanded by God, at least not in any simple or straightforward way. And if this sounds a bit heretical, please ask yourself if you check your garment every time you get one to make sure that there's no linen and flax in them. Because a literalist Jew does just that. And in New York City, there are a lot of laboratories who will take your coat, your new suit if you're a guy, and open the interliner to make sure there's no admixture of wool and linen together. Do you check your lettuce on a light board to make sure there's not a speck of a bug in it? Because a lot of literalist Jews really do. Do you refrain from marital intimacy except at home in total darkness during the middle of the night while following a number of other restrictions? Have you made sure never to lend money to a non-Jewish friend unless you charge them interest? I think that I bring these pointed parts of the tradition out to indicate that most of us are non-literalist Jews. And so one of the blessings of that is that it opens up a way to understand and connect with God. And so we've got three of our congregants who are going to try to do that. And the hope is that on this day in which we call it the coronation of God, that we'll get to understand how three people wrestled and came up with their own understandings, and how hopefully that will resonate with us. So at this point, I'd like to call up Jane Roosevelt to share some comments.
Thank you, Rabbi Kosak, for asking me to speak today. It actually inspired me to be here on the second day. I don't usually do that. Okay. On Rosh Hashanah, we proclaim as our King the one God who made every person and thing. We hope for the day when all peoples and nations will all join together in true veneration. Yes, God is our King who rules all God's creatures. God's even more awesome than Miriam, my teacher. I don't have a teacher, Miriam. Last year, I took Rabbi Kosak's weekly class, God for Grownups. I wasn't feeling all that grown up regarding my spiritual beliefs, and I thought I might be enlightened. The goal of God for Grown-Ups class was to sketch out our own God concept, or to be able to express a vision of God that we could believe in. We discussed both classic and contemporary ideas relating to good and evil, to the creation of the world, to God's name and nature, God's relationship to the Jewish people, God as a lawgiver, and many others. By the end of the 10-week class, we would hopefully move towards a personal theology. We would begin to be able to form answers to the question, what do I believe? In the Rosh Hashanah service, we proclaim that God is the King of the universe. We say prayers and verses to celebrate God's sovereignty, and we describe and accept or not God's kingship. I asked myself, Do I really have in mind a regal image when I think of God? Or do I see God as more of a spirit, force, or being? I don't have a regal image, and I don't know about the other. So I sought some answers from my fellow congregants in a booklet published by Rabbi Isaac 9 years ago. This, I believe. At Rosh Hashanah, he asked congregants to submit no more than 750 word essay on the topic, This, I Believe. And I will read some short statements that spoke to me. Here's one. I found myself hoping that I could get in 750 words without stating what I believe. That would be me, probably. And another. When I immerse myself in prayer, I may struggle with the words written in the passage. That struggle is part of my process for gaining clarity. I don't believe every word I read. Someone else wrote them. However, I believe the process they went through to share those words was good and serves me well. A third. It's clear I don't expect to ever recognize the nature of evil, creation of the universe, or even how I got to where I am. Having the final answer isn't important. Studying and asking questions is. Faith is a choice that demands the courage to speak our dreams out loud, to state the significance of our lives on something that cannot be seen or touched or proven. There are so many wise words in this little booklet. I kept it. I'm glad I did. One person's essay directed me to the Shel Silverstein book, The Missing Piece. In this book, there's a circle with a wedge cut out. The incomplete circle travels by rolling far and wide to try to find that wedge. The circle seems to think it would be happier when complete. However, on the quest for fulfillment, it stops to smell the flowers, to feel the rain fall in its missing piece mouth, and to have much fun experiencing its world. When it does find the piece, it realizes that it doesn't need it after all to seek these new adventures. The circle then encourages a little piece to start rolling as well. So it went off without the piece, and who knows what happened to the piece. These thoughts gave me comfort in knowing that I was not the only one who struggles, that I don't have to know God or even have my GPS take me there. Next.
Thank you.
Sure. Alan, if I can call you up now. Alan Blank.
So if you've never studied our sages, you'd be amazed at the different theological statements that our sages have made over the 3 millennia that we have recorded stories from them. And at its base, I raise my hand, I am a non-literalist. I don't believe that the Torah states things like what we just read this morning as fact. I think they state them to teach us. To teach us, in this case, faith. Later, we're going to recite the Unetanet Tokef. It's bothered theologians for centuries. No one even knows its true origin, but it comes from a time of desperation. And in the Unetanet Tokef, it seems to indicate that God sits with an open book and records each of us. Except it doesn't say that God makes the recording. It says, it is written. And my interpretation, for what it's worth, is that we are writing it. We are writing that which we can control. There are things we can't control. But if we turn to the three words that it says, teshuva, tefila, and tzedaka, we lead a more meaningful life. I also believe we see God in the I and thou that Martin Buber talks about. I read the book as a teenager, and it stuck with me all these years, that when you have a true relationship with one person and another, there's a spark in there. There's something you can't quite describe. And my definition would be that is some glimpse of God. Same thing when you're taking a walk out in the forest or you're in the gorge and you're looking at majestic beauty that you can't begin to comprehend. How does this exist? How do we get so lucky to experience it? And again, I see that as that spark. The really great news from our course is that we all can create our own theology. There is no one theology in Judaism. It's the blessing that's bestowed to us in Deuteronomy, and it's the blessing that exists today for all of us so that we can make the prayer book meaningful and we can make our lives meaningful as we see fit. Because if you really did try to be a literalist, you would have an awful lot of problems trying to put two and two together and come up with four. So we all have license to create a Judaism that works for us, that's meaningful, that works for our families. I think one of the rabbis that really triggers in me a resonance is Rabbi Harold Schulweis, Oliver Shalom. He was the rabbi at Valley Beth Shalom. I know at least one couple used to belong there or went there. His concept was to change God. He called it predicate theology. Change it into the predicate as opposed to God. So it says God is loving? No, we're loving. And that really resonates with me. And he expounds on it to say that godliness, that part where we're in the image of God, so that if we act in a certain way with respect and honesty, etc., you know, and really helping those less fortunate, that is the message that I take as being there. Now, you know, no theology can work unless you deal with theodicy, which is the pure evil. And I do believe we all have, you know, both the good voice and the bad voice whispering to us. And, you know, there's a lot of science that goes with it that says sometimes the bad voice has to win, right? The Yetzer Hara. But I think it's incumbent on us to always remember that there is a right way and that our sages have taught us this. And I want to say one thing before I end, which is the rabbi was a great teacher. But frankly, our fellow congregants who were in the course were also great teachers, and it was a wonderful course to learn with. Shana Tova.
Our final speaker today is Mary Dawn Duckler, and looking forward to your teaching us as well.
I want to make sure I can be heard. God for grown-ups. Around this time, earlier in the year, and it's crazy that it was this year, I was excited to see that Rav Kosak was teaching a class, even if I wasn't sure of the subject, which was God for grown-ups. Many others felt the same excitement, and so a large group of us met in the back of this chapel sitting around a big table. I had never before been in a class where I was so sure that everyone believed they were going to flunk the final. Whose concept of God would prevail? Rav addressed these anxieties with a fascinating little thing you may have heard of called education. Every week, we read widely in Jewish theology, ancient and contemporary, through the lens of feminism, through the lens of intellectualism, and this is a practice I've tried to continue outside the class because I am like a C student if C is for conception. That class proved that Jewish theology is complex, more varied than you would imagine. It has breadth and depth and travels all over the universe. I owe that class a debt when Rav Kosek came and said to me, "How can we consider this holiday the coronation of a king?" You know, that's what you get when you have an education, many new ways to see how something can be problematic. And even if you switch it to a queen, questions remain. Because basically, we aren't royalists, we aren't admitting of hierarchies, and we certainly aren't happy to think of ourselves as anyone's servant. For sure, we wouldn't crown a king that we don't even believe in. But if we are honest about ourselves, and this is what we are trying to do this time of year, right? Be honest about ourselves. We'd probably agree that we do have allegiances. As the great Jewish mystic that somehow got left off the curriculum of our class, and Rav, I was surprised by this omission. As the great Jewish mystic says, you're gonna have to serve somebody. Bob Dylan has a long list of possibilities, and we can certainly insert our own. We serve our children, our parents, our careers, our political parties, our pets, our agendas, and our dreams. We are crowning the king of our attention every single day. So the question is, what, if anything, resides outside those personal categories? We saw in our class that some problems swirled around that name, God. People weren't crazy about it. Yet, as you may know, there are many other names. The smallest number I've seen is 7, and the largest was in the thousands. Some of these are the Great One, the Strong One, the Existing, Master of the Universe, Freer of Captives, the Seeing One, I Am That I Am, She Who Must Be Obeyed, I guess that's from Rumpola the Bailey, the Nameless, the End. One way to understand God for grown-ups was how great minds have been wrestling with trying to name this king. And I think we owe it to these days of awe to come up with one for ourselves that addresses the ruler to whom we owe fealty, the one that ultimately rules over our own limited conceptions of ourselves and includes not just our neighbors and our community and our desires, but the whole rest of the world, being born into servitude and liberation this day and every day. Shana Tova.
It takes some guts to come up in front of people on the high holidays and talk about the one subject Jews don't tend not to talk about, God. So I want to give a special Yasha Kark to Jane and Alan and Mary Dawn for sharing your thoughts, your struggles, your tentative conclusions. And I'll just conclude by saying that the God I want is a God I feel, a God of emotion who touches me. And for a long time, the way I did that was put my mind over here, and I continue to approach God as a kid, like to a dad, as the liturgy says, because that opened up my heart, and I could feel that God. And my whole path along the way was to say, enough with that. How do I keep that heart and bring my adult mind in? And I find the way that worked for me. So I guess on these high holidays, I don't think God is dead, but I do think that we all have to look for God, the God who not only can we believe in with our heads, but hopefully the God we can feel with our heart as well. I wish you good luck in that process over these amazing days of awe. And if you want to speak afterwards about your God or your God struggles, my office is open. Shana Tova.